FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 9/4/18. Hope you all had a great Labor Day weekend. We did here, although it rained for much of it, but still fun nonetheless. Still working on optimizing the studio, getting the sound as good as it can be, and making it more productive, and we're getting there. So, hey, as always, join the conversation. Join the discussion. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, hey, maybe now the natural disasters will take a break, the fires will stop, and maybe we'll get a little global cooling. It is that time of year, but hey, let's see what happens. Gold getting slammed down $9. Silver was down even more, but now it's down 37 cents to 14.07 the ounce. That's as of 12:15 p.m. today. Well, what's with that? Were we feeling deja vu all over again? Is this 2008? Well, John Rubino is here. He's got his opinion on it. John, he's going to say happy Monday, but it's Tuesday. We missed Monday this week, but we'll be working Thursday and Friday to record some more interviews for you. But happy Tuesday.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, the way it works in this field that you and I are in, holidays are nice, but they don't really lower the workload, right? So we have to make up in the rest of the week what we didn't do on Monday.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Gold and silver are getting whacked this morning. Mm-hmm. Which is making a lot of people kind of nostalgic for 2008, which is kind of unusual in the world. Not too many people miss that year, but for gold bugs,
it's a great
there's year. A special place in financial history for 2008, because in that year, the world behaved kind of like it is today. There was a boom in housing, followed by kind of a crash in the subprime part of housing. In other words, something on the periphery started to blow up. And all the experts said, oh, don't worry, it's small and it's isolated and it doesn't matter, and the good times will continue. But they didn't continue. The periphery crisis spread to the core, started threatening the big banks in Europe and the US, and there was a huge financial crisis that hit in 2008. And gold and silver, which are traditionally safe havens in that kind of situation, got swept along. They fell as hard as everything else did for about 6 months. In 2008, gold went down about 20%. Silver went down about 40%. The gold to silver ratio spiked up into the 80s. In other words, it costs 80-some ounces of silver to buy an ounce of gold, and gold and silver mining stocks just got crushed. A lot of them were down 80 or 90% in the space of less than a year. So it was a brutal situation for precious metals and the companies that mine them and the people that own those stocks. But it was really short lived. The governments of the world responded to the peripheral financial crisis moving to the core by cutting interest rates, bailing out everybody in sight, buying up trillions of dollars of financial assets with newly created currency. And we got the recovery that we've had for the past 8 or 9 years now. But the situation has begun to repeat. In the process of this recovery, we lent money to an awful lot of subprime borrowers. Mm-hmm. The auto market has been driven by subprime auto loans. Student loan balances are now like $1.5 trillion, and a lot of those aren't being paid back already while the economy is growing. You know, let there be a recession, we'll see this huge spike in student loan defaults. But the biggest subprime lending binge of the past few years has been emerging markets. The big Western banks lent trillions of dollars to developing countries that wanted to speculate that the US dollar would keep going down versus their local currencies. And that worked for a little while. In other words, they borrowed dollars at, let's say, 2%, reinvested the money in their local bond market for 6 or 7% and made this great carry, which really improved their finances. But it didn't last. The dollar started going up versus their currencies, which made their big bet on a weak dollar turn sour and started to really decimate the finances of a lot of these countries, which led people to sell off those currencies, which made their problems with their external dollar debt even more serious. And now you've got a death spiral in which several emerging markets have already basically just imploded, and five or six more look like they're on the verge. And because the Western banks lent that money to these guys, they're back on the hook again for several trillion dollars, which is going bad at an accelerating rate. So the question is, do the world's central banks respond to this crisis the same way they responded to the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis? If they don't, then we're going to find out if, for instance, Spanish banks can survive having lent 5% of Spanish GDP just to Turkey.
Yeah, that's a sound investment, yeah. I think. So the Spanish banks are gone, basically. A lot of banks around the globe, and they loaned out in dollars, and local currencies have collapsed. I mean, you don't even have to look at Iran and Venezuela. It's the Philippines. Somebody got down on me. They were insulted that I didn't realize that Filipinos use pesos. And look, there's like 200 different currencies in the world. I just happen to forget. I do know that. And Venezuela uses the bolivar. And God, what does Iran use? But I do know that. But I slipped my mind right now, so I'll probably get more nasty feedback on it, John. But look, it's not even the most marginal of places. China's currency is under pressure now as well, right? All over the place, the dollar is really playing this disruptive force in global economic stability. It's become really unstable on the upside sometimes and on the downside other times. And where it stops, nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, the question becomes now, what do we have to do to fix this? Because these guys, these emerging markets can't fix their own problems in this world, since their bets have already gone sour and everybody has abandoned their currencies. They can't, for instance, Argentina raised their overnight lending rate to what, 60% just lately? Mm-hmm. That doesn't really help because that bankrupts anybody that has cash needs, right?
Yes.
So maybe you protect the value of your currency, but you do so by taking a blowtorch to a big chunk of your economy. So they can't fix their problem. And the only way that the problem in general can be fixed is if the dollar goes back down. What we did in 2008 was basically take steps to lower the value of our currency. In other words, to make money much cheaper. And in that way, bail people out of the bad loans they'd taken on leading up to the crisis. Well, we would have to do something like that again, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing to watch for here, if the crisis continues, is what the Fed says first. Do they walk back their promise of 4 more interest rate increases over the next year and start saying, well, maybe we'll just do 2 and then maybe we won't do any. And you know what? Maybe we'll cut rates. Maybe they're high enough now and the yield curve is almost inverted and the world is a much scarier place than it was in 2018 and we'll start cutting rates again. So that's one thing that tells us we're back in 2008. And the other is if they start bailing out the banks, in other words, if the Spanish and Italian banks get bailed out, or if one or two of the big U.S. banks that we don't see coming right now has some kind of a crisis that requires a bailout. That's the other thing. And then if we reinstitute quantitative easing, if they start buying back financial assets rather than shrinking the Fed's balance sheet, we start increasing the Fed's balance sheet again. If that happens, then we really are back there again. With the difference being the numbers are way bigger. So if, you know, it took $7 trillion of loan guarantees to bail out the banks last time around. It's going to take $20 trillion this time. And will those numbers terrify the markets? They ought to. The old numbers should have terrified the markets, but we'll see. You know, we'll see if they have the tools still to engineer another gigantic global bailout without decimating the value of the big fiat currencies. And that's always been out there. And this time could be the time.
It could be. Hey, and John, you're a reader. I'm a reader. And Blinkist, you got to check that out. You know, if you're like John and I, the list of books that you want to read or those people suggest you read, it's just never ending. It's always, always expanding. You simply don't have time to read them all. And our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must-reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books. It distills them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. With Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge. You'll learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen to it anywhere you like. I've gotten Blinkist. You should definitely get it too. Look, I like to listen to Blinkist while I'm driving off to an undisclosed coffee shop for my morning shot of Java. The Blinkist library is massive, from timeless classics like War of the Worlds to current Amazon bestsellers all over the place. You just can't find a better source of books and information out there. You know, my personal favorite, one I'm listening to right now as we speak, is The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan, and it's titled A New History of the World. It's just an 18-minute read. Amazing book. I know you'll like it. And the best part is that Blinkist is constantly curating and adding new titles from best of lists, so you're always getting the most powerful ideas in a made-for-mobile format. It really is amazing. You know, there's over 5 million people using Blinkist now to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you FSN community members. Go to Blinkist, that's Blinkist.com/FSN, and start your free 7-day trial today. That's Blinkist, Blinkist.com/FSN. Get started today on your free 7-day trial. You can cancel anytime. Again, Blinkist.com/FSN. Hey, here's some great books, timeless classics there. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, The Miracle Morning, Thinking Fast and Slow, Getting Things Done. The list just goes on and on. There's some current ones on there too. Current Amazon bestsellers: Subtle Art of Not Giving a F You Know What, You're a Badass, Sapiens, Fire and Fury, 12 Rules for Life, one of my favorites by Jordan Peterson. Look, your time is limited. There's all these books that you want to read, but you're missing out on. Why not let somebody else do the heavy lifting for you? They find the most important segments of the book, distill it down to 15 to 20 minutes. You listen to it, and it's like you read the whole book. And if you really, really want to after that, go back and read the book. But in the meantime, you'll have gotten the most important lessons of the book. And you do it 15 minutes at a time. That's what's best. Blinkist.com/FSN. Blinkist, Blinkist.com/FSN. And start expanding your mind today. Anyways, nobody knew about the 16 trillion or 17 till months after it happened, or maybe years. They weren't exactly transparent. So when they need 30 trillion this time, they're not going to even think about it. They're just going to do it. And that's just the way that the world of central banking works. It's the least transparent, the least transparent government agency around in any place is the central bank. And it just occurred to me, it's the Iranian rial, so you can save the nasty comments for another misstep. Hey, John, we've actually got a few questions here, and maybe they're becoming more relevant as these markets kind of go totally insane here. They came in a couple of weeks ago, And we didn't have time last week to really answer them, but a lot of stuff happening here. And let's find the first one. Been a YouTube listener for a couple months. You have a good program, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of compliments. We like them. He makes several observations. He also said, I will tell others to tune in. If you're listening, you like the show, tell other people about it. Send them a link so we get more people on the bandwagon. So number one observation, it looks to me like every country on the planet is deficit spending. So do deficits matter anymore? Number two, couldn't the central banks, in parens Fed, buy up all the bonds and just cancel them? The Fed isn't audited, so who really knows what takes place? Three, many say precious metals protect against financial calamity. Wouldn't oil and oil stocks do the same? There are some good dividend payers like Exxon, and he gives a few other examples. Royal Dutch Shell, I don't know what that one symbol is. Four, I have been a stock bond mutual fund investor and trader for a long time, 30 years or so. Can't really figure this market out at the moment. Not sure what is going on, but it's probably not good. This is from Ken, and he's out in Missouri. Thanks for the inquiry, Ken. So what do you think about all that? Does deficit spending matter anymore, John, or do we just not care?
Yeah, well, Kerry, what happens in every bubble is that some aspect of it is historically unusual and considered bad. But as the bubble goes on, the idea takes hold that this thing doesn't matter. For instance, in the tech stock bubble of the 1990s, earnings per share used to be a thing you looked at for stocks. And then as stocks went up and up and up, people started saying, well, earnings don't matter anymore. You know, eyeballs matter. So just ignore earnings. And that, of course, wasn't true, and stocks tanked, and now we look at earnings again. Not as much as we should be, probably, but with deficits, what happened in the 1980s, really, was that deficits were very important. And Ronald Reagan ran big deficits as part of a political strategy to force the Democrats to go along with spending cuts. Because back then, deficits were perceived to be politically dangerous. You could lose your job as president if you ran big deficits. But Reagan got reelected, left office as a popular president, and everybody took the message from that deficits don't matter anymore because governments can do it. They can run big deficits, they can borrow huge amounts of money, and nobody votes against them for doing it. So fast forward to today, we've all around the world, with the exception of Russia, have been borrowing huge amounts of money year after year after year. And like ignoring earnings in the 1980s, ignoring debt levels now will come back to bite us. It will be proven to be an incredibly unwise strategy. But we're in the bubble phase of the process now where it seems like it doesn't matter because, you know what, we're borrowing tons of money. We have been for a long time and we're still here. You know, we haven't blown up. So maybe that doesn't matter anymore, but it does matter. Debt is debilitating beyond a certain point and we'll reach that point and we'll all go, oh God, did we really think, you know, borrowing that much money was a good idea? It'll come. So Kerry, what was the second question?
All right. The second question, Ken in Missouri, couldn't central banks, Fed, buy up all the bonds and just cancel them out, basically?
Yes, that's something that people were talking about during QE, how, you know, it really doesn't matter if the Fed is buying back these bonds. It doesn't matter if the government's borrowing because the Fed can just cancel them. It's all make-believe, which is true, except that what's not make-believe is the currency the Fed had to create and toss out into the financial system in order to buy the bonds. So if the Fed buys back government bonds and then just canceled them, in effect, what we're doing is financing the government directly with newly created currency. And historically, that kind of monetization of the government has led to a hyperinflation where the government is released from all constraints on what it can spend. So it spends a lot because governments always face competing needs. And if they don't have to prioritize, they can just spend money on everything. And the Fed creates enough new currency to cover all those expanding needs, which is really what we're doing right now. Eventually, the oversupply of currency that is thus created blows up the currency. In other words, people see that there's just this world awash in fiat currency, and then don't want to hold the currency anymore because there's just too much of it. You know, the price of everything is going up. So you get the crack-up boom in the Austrian School of Economics when everybody just loses faith in the currency, dumps it as soon as they get it by buying real stuff, sending the price of real stuff through the roof. You have a hyperinflation and everything collapses. That's the inevitable result of the idea that the Federal Reserve can just buy back debt and then cancel it, because really what they're doing is just financing the world with newly created currency. So we're doing that too, really, mm-hmm. because it doesn't matter that they keep the debt, because the debt is just make-believe in any event if the Fed is buying it back. So yeah, you know, we're headed for that also. we don't have an emerging market crisis, we'll have a crack-up boom. You know, there are a lot of different crises that can happen because we're creating pressure in a lot of different parts of the pressure cooker, and it's just a question of where it comes out when it does come out.
Exactly. Hey, the other one, precious metals, probably do a little bit better than oil and oil stocks because they have other uses. Oil, you know, it's kind of hard to put a tank in your front yard and store up 10,000 gallons of crude oil. Your neighbors might not find that particularly amusing. They might call it a nuisance. So, and buying stocks and companies, well, the companies are going to be denominated in dollars, and inflation used to be bad for the stock market, but somehow over the past couple of years, it became good. I don't quite understand where that came from. Now, we got one more question. Actually, it's a comment from Mark, and he's correcting us, and I think he's correct. Regular listener, enjoy the show. Heard John and I discussing the Fed shrinking balance sheet a la quantitative tightening. And what he's clarifying is when a Fed asset bond matures, the money they receive from the bond issuer is extinguished. It goes to money heaven. To illustrate, when the Fed buys an asset, they create money out of thin air. They create the money to purchase the asset with a bookkeeping entry. Conversely, when they sell an asset or a bond, and it's holding a bond to maturity, and it isn't rolled over by purchasing new debt, which is what they've been doing. They have been purchasing new mortgage-backed securities monthly, like $5-6 billion a month. Then the opposite occurs, and the principal amount of the maturing bond is extinguished when the Fed receives the dollars. So a bond they hold gets paid off, and they just get the money back. And like he says, it goes to money heaven. And quantitative tightening is to shrink the supply of money by extinguishing it, by allowing Fed-held assets to mature and refraining from using the proceeds to purchase new bonds. And then he said the interest payments the Fed receives from holding assets are passed on to the U.S. Treasury to the extent the interest aggregate revenue exceeds the Fed's operating costs. That is almost correct. But what they've been doing is they've been using the surplus, that money received from interest dividends and cash outs, refis, things like that. They're holding these bonds and they get early payments from a result of when a foreclosure takes place, whatever. What happens, they get that money, they've been rolling it over. They have not been passing that on to the Fed, to the Treasury, rather, as profit. So you agree with that point, John, that they're deflating the monetary system? Effectively, they're deflating the supply of dollars out there? Or if they're doing what they say they're doing or have done in the past, they would effectively be deflating the currency, wouldn't they?
Well, two things. First, this gets back to the point that it's all make-believe, which it is. You know, the basically the Fed is just financing the government by creating new currency, and this whole issuing bonds and then buying back bonds step is just window dressing. But the difference between quantitative easing and what's happening right now is tightening, relatively speaking. Back when they were buying back, $80 billion of bonds a month, they were creating a commensurate amount of currency and handing it to the banks. Now they're not doing that anymore. So relative to the past 5 years or so, we've got tighter monetary policy now. So you can say that we are tightening because we're not buying back bonds with newly created currency anymore. This is a tightening, and it is leading to a slowdown in growth in the money supply. and higher interest rates at the short end, and not so much higher interest rates at the long end. You know, the short end is rising faster than the long end, which is a sign of monetary tightness. So things are different than they used to be back when tightening actually meant, you know, literal tightening. But yeah, this is relative tightening because we're not flooding the system with currency anymore. Exactly. And that will come back also to bite the economy. A highly leveraged economy requires new credit in vast quantities. And if we're not providing that, then there will be an impact.
Yeah, and Richard Duncan talks about that. When the money supply credit in general fails to expand by 3% or more a year, we have a blow up. We have a potentially existential event where things just really go haywire, where money supply shrinks and we got mass bankruptcies like 2008 and 2009, in other words. So I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. Yeah, I know what they're supposed to do, but we have no idea, John, whether they're doing it or not, whether that money that comes in from a bond that matures, that they get the cash and then they just retire it, or they do something else with it. For all we know, they could be buying stocks like all the other world's central banks. The point is, yes, what he said is absolutely, what Mark said, absolutely 100% correct under normal circumstances. But we haven't been in normalcy since 2008, John, when they opened the discount window, when they converted all of those securities firms like Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch. They had done it with American Express. They turned them all into commercial banks. So they effectively print money now. And that's a big deal. That changed the whole dynamics of our economic system and our monetary policy. You know, American Express never used to have credit cards. They had, you know, your bill was due that month when you got the bill. And then they got into the credit business, and then they became a bank thanks to the Bernanke. So, yes, I agree with you, Mark, but no, I don't believe that they're doing it. We have no way of finding out whether they're doing it or not. So these are all really, really interesting things that that we're confronted with. Hey, so anyways, hey, I guess the next thing is go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletters. Send us emails. We love getting them. Hey, if you're listening on YouTube, click that subscribe button and that ringer bell, and you'll get notified when new episodes are posted, which they are rather frequently. We like doing it. It's our favorite thing. There's nothing else we'd rather be doing. So take a look at the sites. Email us, kl@carrielutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. And John, that's it for this week. We'll catch up with you next Monday.
All right. Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.